Welcome to this Market Commentator podcast. It is MoneyWeb's weekly podcast where I speak to leading investment professionals. And my guest this week is Feroz Baza. And Feroz, I'm reading from your Old Mutual website. It says you are the joint boutique head of global emerging markets, and you are responsible for managing and building the investment boutique, one of 10 Old Mutual Investment Group boutiques. Now, I always thought a boutique is a place where you get your nails done or where you buy expensive clothing. Where did this name of boutiques come from?
Yes, I think it's a very interesting comment, right? You know, we run independent businesses at Old Mutual, so, you know, we really focus on what we do. The boutique structure emerged 10 years ago where we split up the businesses where the SA guys focus solely on SA, you know, the global guys focus on global. So we were tasked to build the global emerging markets business. Obviously, very exciting opportunities when you look at the South African market, very limited opportunities for any fund that manages in excess of 5 billion rand, and that's most of the big asset managers. You know, the investment universe has shrunk significantly in South Africa. And we took a view that emerging and developed markets would be a big opportunity going forward. And that's where we started these boutiques. So I jointly manage the emerging market boutique with my colleague Simoniso. And you know, it's been a really a good investment opportunity for clients both in South Africa and abroad.
But let's talk emerging markets. You are one of the premier investment specialists in emerging markets around the world. Yesterday in the Financial Times in London, there was a pretty comprehensive article stating that there seems to be an exodus of investment money from emerging markets, and that is mostly due to the political situation internationally. What is the impact, and is the South African market more or less affected than other emerging markets?
I see that article, and I pulled up the latest equity flows because I was also interested. We did see a sell-off. I mean, if you go back to the beginning of the year, emerging markets, very strong growth. Global growth was really strong, so emerging markets do well in that scenario. The valuation of emerging markets versus developed markets was also very attractive and still is. And we saw these big flows coming into emerging markets. I think if you look at the cumulative flow for the last 4 months, it's been close to $51 billion. I mean, that compared to last year, the total, and that was one of the biggest inflows in the last 5 years, was $79 billion. So you can see a sharp increase in allocation to emerging markets. And what we've seen in Jan and Feb was a risk-on move in emerging markets. The index outperformed by 10%. Since then, we've seen the markets come off, and we're actually down 12% from that high. So there has been some sell-off in emerging markets. I think it's a combination of things. Like if you look at the geopolitical situation globally, people are getting a bit uneasy. You know, there's talk about reinstating sanctions in Iran. There were these jitters around Russia together with Turkey, around the Middle Eastern region, and particularly the uprising in Syria again, the U.S. sending missiles into that region. So geopolitical risk increased a bit. And then also, I mean, the Fed continues to increase the rates. More importantly, the U.S. 10-year yield, which people monitor very carefully, has now increased to just below 3%. So there's expectation of the Fed increasing rates significantly. And you know, when that happens, people start to look at the U.S. as a U.S. 10-year, as a risk-free asset. If inflation is 2% in the U.S. and the potential in a year or two's time to get 3%, you know, on a risk-free asset, they tend to sell off their risk assets, which is emerging markets. So that's what we've seen, right?
So it is a conservative approach, but why don't we see increases in gold counters as well as other defensive stocks?
That's a very good question, right? I think particularly the one in the gold space. I mean, normally when we're in a risk-off market, the average or investors tend to use gold as a safe haven. Gold hasn't really done what you expected it would do in this current market. And I think it's more a trade longer term when it's completely risk-off and something happens, like we see in global financial crisis, and then gold actually does very well. On the defensive side, it's also been different this time. Before, people were saying, you know, yields have gone close to zero in the US, in Japan, and in Europe, and you can get 2.5% yield on some of these high-quality businesses like Heineken, AB InBev, British American Tobacco, and they use that almost as bond proxies, saying, you know what, that's where I'm going to put my investment because I'm getting zero on risk-free assets. So that trade has also unwind as expectations for U.S. 10-year yields going up significantly. You know, that trade has unwound significantly. So we've seen this massive sell-off, particularly in British American Tobacco. Okay, there has been some issues around the tobacco industry, but a large portion of the sell-off has come on the back of this bond proxy sell-off. And it's created some very good opportunities in very well-run businesses with big competitive advantages and very strong cash flows.
Capital flows, how volatile are they? We are seeing an outflow now, but can it return or change tomorrow and then we see significant inflows again?
Yes, you see, right, we're in uncharted territory, I think, from an economic perspective globally, right? We've seen central banks use unorthodox methods. So you had the likes of quantitative easing, going to zero rates to stimulate economies, massive inflows into financial markets. So we're in uncharted territory. We haven't seen this in the past. And the unwinding mechanism is creating unease in the market. So where we don't have history to go back on to see what happened when something like this of this magnitude happened, you know, we don't have some reference point. So investors are sitting back saying, actually, you know, with all these unwinds coming, I'd like to sit on the sidelines and see what happens. Now, having said that, you know, global growth is still reasonable. I mean, I've just come back from a trip from China, and actually China is doing very well. Some of these other emerging markets also doing very well. So, you know, people are sitting on the sidelines. So as we have the growth numbers come out, and obviously the key driver is earnings globally. As we see earnings start outperforming analyst expectations globally, we could see this capital come back into the market.
Looking at your fund fact sheet for your Global Emerging Markets Fund, I see only 2.6% in cash at the end of 31 March. I assume you will not become, you know, more conservative within this context and stay invested in equities?
Yes, I think post the sell-off, right? If you remember correctly, when I told you at the end of Feb, you know, emerging markets had a further rally on the back of a very strong performance in 2016 and 2017. At the time when we looked at our portfolio, you know, we measured the upside of our portfolio on a relative basis. There was less than 30% upside. So that upside is measured normally, we take a 3 to 5 year view. So if you look at those returns, they came down significantly because the market was strong. And hence us having less cash in our portfolio, we participated on the up. But as the market, as we sold off in some of these shares, we have built up a bit more cash in our portfolio and built up a few more defensives in our portfolio.
China seems to be your favorite investment destination. Nearly 20% of your portfolio is invested there. There are some concerns about China as well as the impact a trade war with the US may have. What are your views now of the valuations we see in China?
China is very big in the emerging market index, right? So it's close to 30%. I think if you add our weighting in Naspers, which is purely a proxy for Tencent, we probably have a 4 to 5% underweight. We've done very well from our China trade. I mean, China over the last 2 years has performed very well relative to other emerging markets, and we are starting to take profits. On the issue of this trade war, if you look at trade wars are not good. I mean, we're living in a global economy. The US and China, two of the world's biggest economies, one saying, you know, they're going to put tariffs on and the other retaliating. It's not good for anybody. It's not good for global growth. It's not good for global trade. I think there's somewhere in the middle where there's a compromise in that, you know, that big deficit that the US has with China starts reducing a bit, but there's something on both sides. So I don't think a full-blown trade war would emerge. But having said that, anything's possible. You know, If you look at global leaders a year or two ago, we wouldn't have said we would have the leaders where we are. I mean, the most significant thing over the last few months is that the president of North Korea, you know, has made his historic visit to South Korea, and now this talk of him meeting the U.S. president, which if I told you that a year ago, you would have told me I'm crazy. So, you know, anything's possible, but I think these two big economies globally can't afford a trade war on either side. China is the biggest investor in U.S. treasuries as well. You know, people tend to forget that. And if they start pulling that, what happens to the U.S. current account and all these metrics as they are heavily indebted? So I think a full trade war won't emerge, and there'll be some compromises on both sides.
Just another interesting counter in your portfolio is the Sasol-sponsored ADR. Obviously, that is the U.S.-listed ADR. Why go that route and not buy the share in South Africa?
I think if you look at our fund, we have South African investors and we have global investors. So, but our fund is purely a dollar-based fund. So when we get South African ZAR in, we do convert that to U.S. dollar cash. That's the reference currency that we use. So for us, you taking that U.S. dollars and buying back to Sasol and buying Sasol in the local market doesn't make sense. So we use our U.S. dollar cash to buy Sasol. Sasol, I mean, a very, very interesting one in the global oil space because we can buy in that space. You know, Sasol stands out on a valuation basis. So, and with oil prices where it is, and, you know, the investments in the U.S. starting to pay off less capital being invested, the free cash flow yield of Sasol looks phenomenal. So a very exciting opportunity. And it's merely us using our U.S. dollars to buy the ADR because it moves exactly in line with the SA share.
We're starting this interview off air. You told me that you described the market as a funny market, and it is really difficult to read. What are your expectations for, say, the short and medium term for markets?
Yes, I think, you know, like I told you, like, gold is not moving like it should. When geopolitical risk increases, when the market sells off, usually defensives do well, but they've sold off even more. Valuation-focused companies or value-type shares, you know, any whiff of them underperforming their relative expectations, and they've sold off significantly. So there's no clear sign. Even the tech stocks, I mean, who've been the darlings for a while, we've seen a bit of a sell-off in Tencent, in Alibaba. Lately, Facebook has had their issues, so they've also sold off a bit. So even the high-growth tech space has sold off a bit, and it's not increasing as it did before. And that's what I mean about the funny market. And with this unease around global monetary policy, you know, the market has become much more volatile in the short term. I think what we focus on, and, you know, I looked at our portfolio, the aggregate of our valuations that we have in our portfolio, and there's close to 50% upside on our emerging market fund now. So, you know, that buying opportunity seems to have emerged now, but I know markets are volatile. So what we tend to do is we tend to look 3 to 5 years out. So purely, what does growth look like in emerging markets versus developed markets? And you can see that growth differential has increased. I mean, the average emerging market, the aggregate is expected to grow 5%, whereas the developed market is close to 2%. So there's a nice 3% differential. Also, if I look at the emerging market index, it's now trading on a 12 times multiple versus developed markets on 16 times and South Africa on close to 15 times. So that's where I start looking at the longer term opportunity and saying, you know, the emerging markets are offering value again. Also, some of these currencies have sold off. So not only does the shares offer value, but also there's a bit of an underpinning currencies. Now, having said that, in the short term, there'll be lots of volatility. But if I take a 3 to 5 year view, I think emerging markets are exciting. There's very good opportunities. Barring a significant incident globally, you know, this is my preferred asset class. And that way I tend to have clients diversify some of the offshore holdings to add a bit more of the emerging markets. Also, emerging markets versus South Africa. I mean, South Africa is an emerging market. You know, South Africa confidence has come back in since the new government's come in. You know, but if you look at overall valuations, the relative attraction of SA versus emerging markets is not there.
Within this context, we have differing valuations in the emerging and developed markets. But if we take out the short-term volatility, what do you think of overall valuations and the potential for the medium to long-term?
Yes, I think the starting point is always valuation, which is a very good point. The price you pay today determines your future returns rate. And it's been our philosophy all the time. So if you take the developed world trading on 16 times, you know, the U.S. is even trading on much higher multiples because people have been flooding capital to the U.S. market, emerging markets on 12 times earnings. I think what's very important is what are the key drivers longer term of growth and where do you see that coming out in earnings? So for us, we look at it, emerging markets have very low penetration. So penetration rates in most goods relative to the developed markets is low. I think valuation stands for itself, but growth is also a premium in emerging markets. But the most important thing, right, is that in emerging markets, you have this thing called the demographic dividend. So we have younger populations that are the future consumers of the world. So these are the young people that would come through and replace the older people in doing the jobs of the future. Whereas in the developed world, you know, you have aging populations who become a burden on the state. From a healthcare perspective, people are living longer. So people live longer, access their pensions longer, use the facilities longer. So, you know, the growth potential there. So I think if you take out the short-term volatility and the short-term news flow, and you take a longer-term view, emerging markets are where you're going to make that excess return in the global list.
Well, I have to leave it there. Thank you so much for your time, Feroz Baza. He is the Joint Boutique Head of Global Emerging Markets at Old Mutual.